Riddle me this. What is big enough to eclipse today's Federal Reserve meeting? Hint, it has an English accent, and it rhymes with exit. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. So, the Federal Reserve meets today. They'll have their view on interest rates, but the bigger story is not that. It is not wholesale inflation data that went up 0.4% in May, the fastest rise in 4 months. Bigger is Brexit, that referendum a week from tomorrow in Britain. Susan Schmidt is Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at the Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas.
Interim data, we're going to have some small data points coming out in the U.S. economy between now and then. No one cares. Right now, everyone is focused on what's going on with Brexit, Britain's exit of the European Union, is the prime focus for the markets right now. People are very nervous because should that happen, it's not priced into the market and it will cause some large interim currency disruptions. So you'll see a flight to safety. There's a lot of concern. Right now, no one knows. We've seen different reports come out. Different polls have been taken. It looks like they're leaning to leave. Last night, there was a poll that said, well, maybe they're leaning to stay. Go with what the bookies say. They actually are betting odds on this in the London market, so you can gamble on it. And the bookies think that they're going to stay. I would go with the bookies at the moment. They seem to know.
Great. Financial professionals using British bookmakers.
I know. It's terrible, but there's no good read on this because their population is so diverse. It's so confusing. And so for the market, it's such a large change, and it would have all these implications in terms of currency. The one thing that helps is remember that Britain has always maintained the British pound as its currency. It did not migrate over to the euro. So that separation makes things a little bit easier and very different should Britain decide to exit the EU.
All right. Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
This morning, a readout of about 25 betting companies in Britain all had higher odds that Britain will stay rather than leave the EU, for what that's worth. More now on our collective responses to the horrors of Orlando. Among other things, we've been tracking a campaign by what's called Equality Florida. They're using an online crowdfunding site called GoFundMe.com, and that organization raised more than $4 million as of today to support victims and families. Marketplace's Rima Crace has more.
When 19-year-old Octavio Hernandez heard about the tragedy in Orlando, he didn't hesitate. He went online and donated what he could, $15.
You know, I'm gay myself. That could have been me if I was over there, if I was in a club like that. So it scared me.
The GoFundMe campaign Hernandez contributed to is the fastest growing in the site's history. Donations passed the $1 million mark in less than a day. Ethan Mollick is a business professor at Wharton. He says charitable crowdfunding has taken off in the last 4 years.
But I think that there's certainly some segment of people who are donating who would never have donated otherwise.
Mollick says the ease of giving is a big part of the appeal.
It makes you feel like you're helping much more directly than donating to the Red Cross and hoping something happens in the long term.
But that ease also has a downside, says Sandra Minuti with Charity Navigator.
When money moves quick like that, there's also more opportunity for risk and for scams.
Already, there are more than 100 sites to help Orlando victims, and the Florida Attorney General warns they may not all be legitimate. I'm Rima Crace for Marketplace.
Marketplace's series, The Price of Profits, this week is looking at how that construct, the notion of maximizing shareholder value, has changed American business and the world. This includes business schools. Reporter Dan Bobkoff of our partner Business Insider recently participated in a program that sends journalists to the Columbia Business School.
What exactly did we learn?
That's a very good question.
I met up with some of my classmates for two things that are big in business school, booze and talk of shareholder value. I wanted to know what they took away from our classes. This is Rebecca Hong.
I'd say the overarching lesson that we learned is that while shareholder value or maximizing shareholder value is very important, we have to think about it on a larger scale in terms of the triple bottom line.
Hong took a lot of classes in social enterprise, which promote focusing on people and the environment in addition to pure profit. My classmate Shauna Cox took different classes, and so she had a more traditional view of taking care of shareholders, but
the professors were really good at kind of giving a broader overview that that might not be the only consideration you have to take. There might be some other considerations.
Sometimes professors sneak that in. Corporate finance is the class where students learn how to calculate shareholder value. My professor Daniel Wolfenson gave us a homework assignment where we had to apply formulas to decide what direction a chocolate company should take. There were many possibilities.
There are two cases that are great for the environment but are not so great for the shareholders. And I want the students to struggle with those cases and to realize that the tools that we're using are not capturing these environmental benefits.
At NYU Stern School of Business, finance professor Roy Smith says he teaches that shareholder value is a core tenet of American economics and law. He says corporations should focus on growing the economy.
Not to engage in controversial activities that try to benefit the world.
But even Smith says companies should adhere to the ethical norms of the era they're in.
You could only go so far in pursuit of pure profit.
It was business schools, especially Harvard in the late 70s and 80s, that led the way in pushing shareholder value. But today, many students start Harvard Business School with Gautam Mukunda's leadership class. He says he can't wait until a student says that companies have a legal responsibility to maximize profits.
This is one of the most important things that they need to unlearn. Because many of them believe this, and many of them believe the specific wording that this fiduciary responsibility exists, and it is simply not true.
In one more way things are changing, Wake Forest now has a moral philosopher, James Otteson, on its business faculty.
I've asked my colleagues to think about, well, why finance? So not just how to do it, but what is the good it can provide?
All this suggests that much of the next generation of business leaders is thinking beyond the bottom line. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff from Marketplace.
Also, don't miss the comments of Jack Ma, the billionaire CEO of China's Alibaba, whose company gets a lot of stick for selling counterfeits. He acknowledges it is a problem, but during a speech at corporate headquarters yesterday, Ma said, quote, "The problem is the fake products today are of better quality and better price than the real names. Same factories, same raw materials," Ma asserts. Imagine the conniptions Ma's comments are provoking at the brand name companies, even as I read it out here. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.